And welcome to the Culture and Sports Podcast, where we believe culture is critical to long-term success. I'm Wes, he's Mike, and we're your hosts. And today we have a very special guest, a leader in all aspects of life, a father, a teacher, a coach, our founder, Jeremy Piasecki.
The founder.
The founder. The founder. Jeremy Piasecki. How you doing, boss?
I'm great. How are you today?
We're doing well.
Yeah, we're doing well. You know, it's going to be a good night. We got a lot of stuff to talk about, a lot of interesting things. And honestly, I mean, we just want to ask you a little bit about yourself and kind of have you explain how you got involved in culture and sports in the first place.
Well, that's a great question. I guess I'll start off with why I like sports and what drives me with sports. So I started playing sports in my youth. I started with like rec soccer, and you know, a tiny bit of club soccer. And I eventually went on to actually play a little bit of semi-pro soccer as a young adult. But nice. Where my aquatic experience came in was, when we first moved to California, when I was in elementary school, I actually drowned in someone's pool. And luckily, one of the kids of the owners of that pool, like pulled me out, about 30 seconds into me drowning. And my parents said, no, we need to get Jeremy into swim lessons. So, I started
to swim.
Big motivation.
Yeah. And so I did both for a while. I did recreation and club swimming early on, and then I started competing at high performance levels later on. I also played water polo a little bit before high school, a little bit in high school, and a little bit in college as well. I actually spent most of my water polo playing career professionally when I was in Germany and for 1 year in Italy as well. I've coached at all levels swimming and water polo, and even a little bit of soccer at the recreation, club, high school, high performance, professional, international levels. I honestly think that sports are a way to connect people, communities, and even countries, and people from different countries. Sports develops future leaders and citizens of those same communities that people are living in and competing in. And sports also helps athletes learn resiliency, leadership skills, working together in team settings, even if the sports are individual, like swimming and track, cross country, stuff like that. Even in practices for individual sports, athletes have to learn how to train together and share resources. So even with individual sports, there's still a team component, and that's where all of those learned skills come in. And that's honestly why I just love sports and what my background is itself in sports.
So it's pretty crazy to me how you kind of, you got kind of thrown in back, you know, just kind of bringing it back when you were younger. Soccer athlete, you know, that's what you thought you wanted to do. You got thrown in a pool one day and all of a sudden now you're an amazing swimmer and it just kind of, evolves, which is super interesting. And it's cool to hear, you know, kind of how you evolved into that. One of the things that you were mentioning on, a little bit earlier is, you know, bringing countries together, things like that. You've done some really interesting things and I want you to kind of talk about it a little bit, if you would. In 2008, I know that you, started an amazing endeavor and I just want you to kind of break into it a little bit and kind of, let us know what happened in 2008 for you.
Of course. So in 2008, I was in Afghanistan, the first time I was in Afghanistan, and I ended up finding a empty pool filled with trash on this small base in Afghanistan about an hour east of Kabul. And I convinced the pool owner to clean out the pool and fill it with water, and I would teach the locals how to swim and play this game.
A compound that you found? It was a compound and they were there and the pool was there and you just convinced this guy to open it up for your guys?
Yeah, like, so
that's pretty awesome.
So this pool was there. It was in a training area, and they hadn't used it for many years, but when they did use it, it was used as a water reservoir. It wasn't used as a pool for people to swim in because as soon as the pool would fill up with water, the water would empty out, you know, to water plants or if they were growing some vegetables for the local dining facility for the military members. So, through some people that were working with the owner of that pool, I convinced them, like I said before, to clean it and fill it with water. And then his organization was that like selected.
A rank? Did you just pull rank?
What was that?
By convincing, was that like a rank pool? Or you're like, hey, we need to fill this up with water and put the people here in the swim? Or what was it more
That's
like
a that? Great question. So I had to convince him what the benefit would be for him. Which, nice. You know, and in Afghanistan, they take sports very seriously, and they only want for, you know, people to be the best and to not necessarily win, but to perform at a very high level. So it took a lot of convincing why, you know, his soldiers would, none of them knowing how to swim, would be willing to jump in a pool and learn how to swim, and also learn how to play this new game that no one else in Afghanistan ever heard of. So he eventually filled the pool with water. He hand selected a team, and we started practicing. It was just a small local team, and eventually the Afghanistan National Olympic Committee heard about what we were doing, and they wanted me to help them start a national water polo program and help their recently started national swimming program. And the national swimming program actually started that week, and they wanted me to help them develop it. What I didn't realize is me helping them meant that they wanted me to be involved for a long time period. And obviously that was lost in translation, or there was just an expectation that was never translated. But it's been an incredible journey. And it's something that while I introduced the sport of water polo to Afghanistan, the people in Afghanistan were really the ones who started taking off with the program. And they are the reasons for its success today.
That was going to be my next question. Like, how receptive were they as a community is to you bring in a new sport as an American? And, you know, just, you know, hey, guys, get in the pool. And it's a fun game. You throw this ball around and throw it in the hoop. How are they as far as accepting that? And, like, were they excited? So, were they kind of?
Yes. So never in my time in coaching did I ever have an audience of people that were there to watch. Most of the time, there was, like, 20 to 30 people at any given time. And, you know, sometimes people would come and take photos, like American journalists or just people that were interested in what we were doing. And I, you know, after the first couple times, I didn't really notice the audiences, but there'd be times there would be hundreds of people there, you know, just watching practice.
A lot of these guys are active military over there, right? They're active.
Yeah. So they were active military, and they were trying the sport because it was on a military base. And they were trying the sport because it was an opportunity, obviously, for them to learn how to swim, because most people in Afghanistan do not know how to swim, because their only accessible bodies of water at the time were like lakes or reservoirs. Like, mm-hmm. swimming pools were not a thing unless you were rich or had access to them. And we also estimated in 2008, there was only about 12 to 15 pools in all of Afghanistan. And all of those pools were private. And so, like, you know, normal people did not have access to them. And even if they did, they just couldn't afford the access to them. And so, you know, people would come out in droves and watch this. And the athletes, other than being a little self-conscious about, you know, participating in a sport that they were new to, and yeah. All the people that were watching, they loved it. They loved every second of it. You know, obviously, it was extremely difficult for them. And our standard of in the Western world of what a competing team would look like was definitely not the same as what we were working with in Afghanistan, which actually made it so much better, because people were there because they wanted to be there and they wanted to learn and they wanted to succeed. You know, as opposed to the Western world in sports, there are obviously different reasons why we're in sports. You know, but theirs was like for, you know, pure love of sport, for a lack of a better phrase to use.
So would you say that that it brought everybody back? I mean, it's culture and sports. So would you say that this brought everybody a little bit closer? You know, when you had games and things like that, like community, like, I mean, you think of all these people coming to all these games, these guys are now playing together on this, you know, in the same pool, like hanging out.
Playing a new sport.
Yeah. I mean, it's gotta be pretty fulfilling to see that happen.
Yeah. So, in 2008, towards the end of the summer, the Afghanistan national swimming team was having their first competition, and they invited the local team that I was coaching and also the national water polo team to compete. And You know, I don't recall much of what happened at that event when it came to how people competed, but what I do remember is the amount of love and support, just the great culture of sports in Afghanistan, which, you know, honestly, I hadn't really seen since I started coaching at my earliest times when it was just younger kids who really just wanted to be there to play sports. So there's no other real way to explain how pure and enjoyable it was, other than for, you know, people in the same country, even though it was war torn and they're one of the poorest countries in the world, you know, they just love being there. They love competing. They loved each other, even though they didn't know each other, even though they came from different, you know, socioeconomic or just different cultures themselves, or different languages, they still found a way to love each other and support it. And that's why I believe culture and sports is so important, because, you know, you can have positive culture or leadership, or you can have negative culture and leadership, and those will either positively or adversely impact the short and long-term physical, mental, and emotional health of athletes, team performance, and organizational success. And that's why culture and sports was founded, and that's why it's so important to me.
Absolutely. And when you were younger, I mean, I'm sure you had the same kind of issues. I'm sure you've had good coaches, bad coaches, and mm-hmm. seen the difference in kind of, you know, how it could push somebody. You know, if you have the same types of coaches that are always, you know, negative and doing that kind of stuff, it could be a real, you know, it could be a real problem. So
exactly.
It's because every time like a plane flies over.
Okay. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Is that my plane or no, is it my end or your guys' end?
You, Jeremy.
Hold on a second. Do I need to go back and re-say anything
or we just move on? We can edit it
now. Yeah, yeah. Okay, awesome. Okay, sorry. So what was the next question? My apologies.
Should we wait a second until the video comes back? Okay. All right, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Let's see. Let's
think you're talking about bad coaches, good coaches.
Yeah. So, with different coaches, I mean, I'm sure you've experienced, you know, good coaches and bad coaches and how it changes not only, you know, the atmosphere of the team, the culture of the team, but I mean, it could change you at home and make you a different person. So I feel like, you know, it's super important to have, good culture in sports, and there's so many different ways to do that. And I was just going to ask you, you know, what are a couple of different ways,
how did you leave the organization in Afghanistan? Like what kind of traits or aspects were you looking for in a coach or administrative when you left that to kind of set that bar for a positive culture and to move forward in a, you know, in an uptick, if that makes sense?
No, that's a great question. And, you know, in Afghanistan, in different parts of the world, people do things differently than we do here in the U.S. And that was the biggest adjustment I actually had to go through as a coach or as a team administrator or a program administrator, was that just because we did it a certain way in the Western world does not mean that it will be successful or even work in another country or another culture. And so that was the biggest learning curve that I had as a coach. And so some of my initial goals or objectives were unrealistic, not because the goals and objectives themselves were unrealistic. It was just unrealistic of how I thought the organization should proceed and move forward. And so we had a wonderful new president that for the Water Polo and Swimming Federation come in 2013. And he really set the pathway to where we are today, because he wanted to solely be there for the development of water polo and swimming in Afghanistan. He wanted to be there to support the youth of Afghanistan and to get them, you know, into a pool or just even working out somewhere so they were off of the streets and they weren't susceptible to you know, gangs or militias or, you know, foreign fighters or anything else, where they would be in a semi-safe environment. And he wanted the athletes to succeed, you know, both personally and in sports. And while, you know, like I said before, you know, I only introduced the sport of Afghanistan or sport of water polo to Afghanistan, but there are so many other people that were instrumental in its success. And that's where those people came in. And so, you know, after 2013, all these different people started coming in. Like, we had a basketball player who was retiring from, you know, playing basketball in Afghanistan, and he wanted to start coaching swimming and water polo. And even though he didn't have the technical aptitude, he had everything that we wanted, and it all started with his heart. And he wanted, you know, everyone to be successful, and he didn't want to tear people down. He wanted to prop people up and support them and support the team. And that was what the most important thing is. And I think that's most important for any organization. And I can obviously go on talking about this for a long time, but, you know, where is their thought process? Where is their heart? And those are the types of things that are important for a winning organization.
Absolutely. No, I completely agree with you. I mean, definitely agree with you on that. So, I mean, going into that, I mean, just accomplishing all that, I mean, is that something that just paved the way for you to start Culture and Sports? I feel like, I mean, that had to be a huge part of it. I mean, just that whole experience altogether.
Yeah, I mean, that was definitely a experience itself that really pointed to me to just how important culture and leadership in sports is in general. But it all started from my youth. I mean, I remember early coaches early on, some were that I was indifferent about. I'm sure they provided both positive and negative experiences for me. But I really remember the extremely positive coaches and the extremely negative coaches. And I just remembered how they acted and what they were focused on. And most of the you know, negative or adverse coaches were solely focused on winning, and that was the most important thing for them. And it didn't matter anything about the athletes or the teams. And those were the experiences that I carried with me. There's something about a negative comment
from a coach as a kid. I'm sorry for cutting you off, but there's something about a negative comment from a coach as a kid that really sticks with you. Like, the positive ones, you know, they'll come and they'll go, but those negative ones really, you know, kind of resonate, you know, and sometimes it's your adulthood, and I've experienced that, you know, from friends and
family. Oh, exactly. I mean, even as a young kid, I was a pretty big kid, especially before my teens, and I was called fat several times by many coaches. And while that seems a little trivial that, oh, I was a kid and I was called fat, you know, but obviously that's something that I still think about, you know, semi-frequently to this day, because someone said it in my formative years. And obviously it was someone with power and that demanded respect. And so if they said that I was fat, then obviously I was fat and I had to do something about it. Even though there was no, you know, direction or influence of how to try and fix it, I just felt like a failure because I was a little bit bigger than I should have been. And, you know, those are things that definitely stick with me forever. And if you look at other organizations, you know, youth organizations or USA Gymnastics or just, you know, gymnast clubs or, you know, cheerleading or synchronized swimming, or I'm sorry, artistic swimming now. You know, there's so many stories coming out of those areas right now because there was so much toxicity for so many years. The culture just has to change. And there are some very persuasive individuals coming into the space now or who've recently been there who are trying to change that culture. But it's not an overnight thing. I mean, you have thousands of people in each of these sports, and they've been doing it the same way for so many years. And, you know, change is very difficult. It's important, but it's very difficult.
Absolutely. Well, it starts in the beginning. You know, you got to have somebody to bring attention to it. And, you know, I think what you're doing right now is just amazing. The fact that, you know, we're bringing attention to it. We're going to be talking about a lot of different things that people are going to be interested in.
Really relevant things, you know, and something also to go off, which you were just speaking about, kind of where do you think that starts? Where do you begin that? Like, how do you begin changing that? How do you begin a culture? How do you start a positive, you know, situation, organization? Where do you think that begins? Do you believe it starts at administration? Do you believe you have to have a live in a good area? Do you think it's
mentors, you know, coaches?
Yeah. Do you think it's the people you recruit? You think it's the players that you bring in? Like, where do you think that starts? Who?
Okay, so culture in general is a top-down concept. So it starts at the very top and it goes down. And a team climate starts at the bottom. So it starts at the lowest, you know, level, which would be athletes at this stage, and they come together to create a team environment. And somewhere in the middle, that's where it meets. That's the easiest, you know, way to explain culture and climate. And so organizational culture starts at the top, and it starts with the team owner or the general manager or the president of a board or however it is that the team or the organization is developed. That's where it starts. And normally those organizations or teams, their first hire or their first volunteer is a head coach. And that's where that culture continues. And how that coach brings on other coaches and support staff, you know, that drives what the team culture is going to be. And so while the athletes or assistant coaches can develop, you know, a team climate to help better their own team environment, the organizational culture itself starts at the top.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. I mean, because a lot of people don't understand kind of where, you know, what comes into play and, you know, what has to be affected. So it's like, you know, you really got to get up there and figure out what's going on at the top, especially if you're having issues like this, you know, brought to your attention, especially in so many of the different sports that you were talking about earlier, because a lot of that stuff doesn't come out for years. And, you know, it's already kind of established itself. So like switching it up, like you said, it's going to take some time.
Right. And one of the, you know, an example that I would like to give is James Harden back when he was on the Houston Rockets. You know, everyone was blaming him for the horrible culture that was happening in that organization. But he was just an athlete. While he was the star athlete and probably the highest paid athlete, he wasn't the cause of the toxicity that was in that organization. That obviously came from the top. You know, he was the favorited player and he was off doing what he wanted to do, but no one held him accountable.
Right.
And so regardless of what James Harden did and what people, you know, may not have liked about him, and then, oh, well, you know, he was scoring for them and winning games and that's all that mattered. But in the end, he wasn't the toxic person in there. While he did, you know, probably do things that his teammates weren't, you know, approving of at the time, he was the one who started and continued to foster that toxic culture.
I mean, yeah, OKC has been the same way when they had all three stars on their team. You know, it's not Harden's fault. You know, they had all three perennial all-stars, you know, like Kyrie and KD and James Harden. Like, they had Brooklyn, they had the Brooklyn Nets earlier in the career. And now, like, you can't put that on Harden. You know, it's an organizational thing. You know, it starts
right,
somewhere.
Right, exactly.
It's trying to buy championships. It's, you know, drafting a certain way, think not worrying about, you know, what your players want.
Well, and holding them to account, like, kind of, you know, having accountability for your players. Right. And then, like you said, it starts out at the top. If you're going to let people get away with things, you're going to get away with them. It's their job to create the proper culture for the team, I feel.
Yeah. Exactly. And now with James Harden away, you know, being traded away, is the culture of the organization going to change? No, because it has nothing to do with James Harden. It has everything to do with the culture of the Houston Rockets. And the rookies of the team and even some of the veteran players, they could help facilitate a positive climate, but they can't change the organizational culture. That only comes from the top.
Well put. Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, we talked about a couple of other, you know, things that make it, you know, makes it a toxic culture. And you know, there's certain examples, you know, that you mentioned earlier, but is there anything else specific, like, that you would say that's just like one of those things that you're like, hey, look, make sure you stay away from this, 'cause this definitely creates a bad culture. I know, you know, a lot of teams emphasize too much on winning, like we were saying, and not focusing on the players, where I think it all ends up contributing to winning at the end. But, you know, if you don't have that positive outreach to those players, like, can you give me another example of another toxic?
Sure. You know, one of the things that I was talking to a colleague about a week or two ago was about providing an environment of learning. And what I mean by that is, Do you let your assistant coaches or even your head coach make, you know, decisions that may positively or even negatively impact team performance in the short term? You know, do you want a coach or an athlete to try out a new play or a new technique? And the answer always is yes. You want to provide that learning environment, because if you try out something new and it works and it provides better technique or makes someone run faster or swim faster, those are positive things. If it didn't work, or it fails, you know, failure should be viewed as a learning opportunity, not as something that's negative and that will, you know, impact someone's job or impact an athlete, whether they're starting on a team or being traded from a team. You know, we need to provide those learning opportunities for athletes to learn, for them to become more resilient, for them to learn how to better communicate with their teammates, whether it's in a team setting or an individual sports setting, like I talked about before. You know, those are the types of things. And if you have a coach who is like, it's my way or the highway, we're only going to do things a certain way, that normally leads to less communication, you know, expectation that things will only be done a certain way. And then obviously when things aren't done that certain way, it's a negative interaction as opposed to a positive one. And you can see that all around the world. You know, I obviously experienced that as a youth athlete. You probably have experienced that back when you were playing as youth. I even experienced that when I was playing professionally in Europe. I had a coach who was just stuck in his ways and was not willing to look at, you know, doing things a certain way. The team was not performing at its highest level during that time because they weren't given the ability to try new things and to learn from each other and communicate and to think while they were on the run. It was always, no, we're always going to do the same thing every single play. And it became redundant. Obviously, other teams saw what we were doing and they capitalized on that. And it was just a poor learning environment all around. And I think that's where you'll see a lot of the coaches where they are. You know, it's always their way or the highway. Their teams, while they may be successful short term, if you look at long term success, a lot of those coaches aren't there long term. Right. Now, if you look at people like Bill Belichick, he's constantly changing. But from everything that I've read and everything I've seen, you know, it's a continuous learning environment. Because there's a system in place and the system's always changing. Even though it's being adjusted slightly, you know, always on the run, but it's continuously changing over time. And that's the most important thing. Adjust to the
pieces that he has, you know, available. You know, like...
Exactly. Exactly. And so everything's changing and everyone's continuously learning. And that's the most important thing. And I'm sure you've experienced yourself with coaches that are unwilling to change, or unwilling to learn, or unwilling to even listen to their athletes, because the athletes are the most important people there, and they're actually the ones who have the most amount of information, because they're the ones who are seeing what's happening in practice. They know what their feelings are, or their thoughts are, or what their bodies are telling them to do, and they can best explain different things that are happening during practice or during competition that coaches, you know, probably learned when they were competing, but it's obviously been a while since they were competing, and so they lost a little bit of that touch or that edge, we'll call it.
Yeah, that's awesome insight. And we're being told by one of our producers that we have to wrap it up, but I do want to ask another question. I hear about the situation at Coronado High, they were stripped of their title because after the game, they were throwing tortillas at the fans were throwing tortillas at,
Orange Glen.
Orange Glen. It was a predominantly Latino team, and they were throwing tortillas at them. And I believe they were just, Coronado High's punishment was...
They stripped the title.
They stripped them the title, but they also just... prohibited them from hosting postseason competition from 22-23. We kind of want to get your kind of, do you think the punishment was justified for the whole basketball team over, you know, fans? Do you think that's a cultural thing from the school, or do you think that's, you know, kind of embedded in the whole environment?
And the one thing that we were talking about right before this was, you know, they stripped the team of their title,
But, you know, at the same time, it was like, you know, is it the team? Is it the fans? So, I mean, is it fair to the players to strip them of the title for something that the fans did? And I think it's a tough question to get into, but I thought that was a super interesting question that you brought up.
And they are students. You know, they're all students of the same school, so you kind of have to believe in the environment, you know. But we'd like
right.
to
Right. So you brought up a lot of great points. Well, I wasn't there, obviously, and I don't think you two were there either. But from everything I read in the newspapers, you know, there's some confusion on whether students were directly involved in throwing tortillas or not. But, you know, if they were throwing their tortillas, then yes, it's a team sport. The team should be stripped of the title. And that is not only the fair, but it's the right thing to do. However, with that being said, the students weren't the ones who came up with this behavior on their own. And it wasn't from some random fans that were in the stands. It came from the coaches. It came from, you know, the teachers in the school. It came from the, you know, principal. It came from, you know, even the school district. And so, while it was interesting that they fired the coach, I thought that was an easy out for the organization to just fire the coach,
right?
Because how did a group of fans and parents and athletes all figure out at the same time to start throwing tortillas? There had to have been something that was learned, and you know, whether it was spoken about or not, you know, in practices or in games, someone thought it was appropriate.
To bring
tortillas
it.
To the game, yeah. with the idea of throwing them at the opposing team, you know, once the game was over. And so obviously it was well thought out, but you know, there weren't athletes or coaches or team administrators or school administrators, because there were school administrators at that event, that were shutting it down and stopping, you know, the event when it was happening. And so everyone just kind of watched it happen, and then everyone went their separate ways. And only when the team complained about the treatment that was directed at them, that's when people started reacting to it.
Yeah.
And so, like I said before, it was interesting that they only fired the coach and they didn't do anything else internally within that school or school district.
You think the AD, should have got some kind of repercussion?
Again, I'm not there, but the athletic director has a stake in it. The assistant principals, the principal, the assistant superintendent, the superintendents, everyone has a role in that event. And, you know, again, investigations probably aren't completed, and the school isn't going to publicly talk about the discipline that's being imposed. And maybe they are digging deep, and maybe they are doing some self-reflection to really look at how they want to move forward as not only as a school district or a school, but as a community at large. How do you combat this, and how do you make the environment not only safer for all the athletes that are involved, but also a learning opportunity for people to learn from this and to learn in the future? So important things like this don't happen again.
Yeah, exactly. And since I'm going to keep it like, first of all, how do you get that many tortillas into like a gym? Like the security.
Just smuggling tortillas also, inside like, the gym. Yeah, something's got
to
be weird.
You have to have a better detector on the front. But another thing that's, you know, something that's coming up is got a lot of sports news that's been kind of popping up. We got the news about a couple of days ago that student athletes will be starting to get paid on their name, their images, and their likeness. How do you think that'll affect, you know, collegiate sports?
The culture in general of sports. Yeah. I mean, you know, college, you don't get paid for sports. You know, you wait to get paid, and now things are changing quick.
You get paid for jersey sales. Do you think that'll, you know, kind of those top schools are just going to keep profiting again? Or do you think that'll keep, you know, open up a sector for these smaller schools and their alums to come in and kind of help these kids, you know, with their promotions and advertising? And kind of, what do you think about that?
Yeah, those are all great questions. And obviously history will be the detector of how this will go. It will show us what direction things will happen. But you know, athletes, you know, not all athletes are on scholarship, and that's a common misconception that, oh, the athletes are, you know, their payment is a school scholarship. But in most sports outside of football and basketball, most sports are mostly walk-ons. And especially at smaller level schools or Division III schools, they don't have, you know, all these scholarships to be thrown around. So it's important to understand that. And obviously only the top athletes, you know, in Division I most likely are going to get those sponsorship deals and get the income coming in. And so, yes, you know, some of those athletes might continue to stay in college, you know, especially in sports like basketball, where a lot of those athletes are one and done. Maybe they'll continue to participate with their team before they decide to turn professional. But at this time, I think that the NCAA has liked the autonomy that they've worked with for so long, where they've been able to say, this is how we're going to do things, and there's no one who's going to question us on it. And I think this is a real interesting turn of events, and it will be interesting to see if the NCAA or the conferences have the same power that they had before. And what I mean by that is where they, whatever they said went, and no one could question them or argue them at all. And if they were censured or suspended in some way, shape, or form. So that's what I actually think is the most interesting.
At the same time, don't you think it might be able to give them a little bit more accountability? Hey, look, you know, you mess up in school, you mess up in this, this is gone. You could be making money now, but, you know, you're in college right now, and it could be something to say, and, you know, almost kids, take it away
kids
from
kids are making money already. You know, kids are making... People are getting cars and, you know, free, you know, stay here and, you know, gifts, gifted this and gifted that.
They'll say supposedly on that. But,
you know, so, I mean, like, why not?
Well, it's the same thing. It's the same thing with betting on sports. I mean, betting on sports was happening so frequently, but it wasn't regulated. Exactly. And so it was happening anyways, just like athletes being paid. There were athletes being paid. There's been athletes who have openly come out and said they were being paid, right. You know, not at the time when they were competing, but later or when they were already professional athletes. It's interesting to see what will happen now and the change of the NCAA and the higher earning universities, how they will change. And so that's what I think the most interesting is in the culture of collegiate sports in itself.
Yeah, you have kids, I mean, getting BMWs and cars and stuff like that, and then getting like, but the school's making millions and millions of dollars off jersey sales and commercials. And even after 10 years after they're gone, I mean, Reggie Bush would probably be the highest paid athlete in the world if he was collecting on his jersey sales at USC from, you know, from beginning to end. Like Matt Leinart, like those guys were, you know, killing it, you know, but they and they got in trouble, you know, for, you know, having this little thing on the side or, you know, collecting this little bit, you know, from this booster or that booster.
It's going to be interesting to see if that's going to, you know, what's that going to change for the athletes? Is that going to make them feel more of a professional where they don't mess around and get in trouble? Or is that going to give them a bunch of money to go out and mess around and just so they have an opportunity to make it either a good culture or a bad culture right there, right when they have that opportunity.
Again, it's not the athletes who are going to make that culture. They're going to form the climate of their teams and of the athlete base of the NCAA. The NCAA themselves and the conferences and the institutions are the ones who are going to create that culture. And are they going to be supportive and embracing those athletes with these new changes, or are they going to try and stop it every way possible? But I think there's a win-win for everyone here, and I'm excited to see it, and I really hope it comes to fruition.
Yeah, definitely be an interesting thing to see.
Yeah, too. Well, let's see. Finally, a new change, something, you know, that we've been waiting for, asking for the longest time. You know.
Yeah, and it's interesting that you bring up change in that phrase, because we've been talking about this whole time. But change is very scary for everyone. You know, whether it's an athlete or coaches or, you know, administration at school or at the NCAA. You know, change is extremely scary because we don't know what the destination is going to be for that change. And so, you know, obviously a lot of people are scared of how it's going to turn out, but if everyone is, you know, positive and they try for the betterment of all during this change, I think it will be successful for everyone.
Nice. Yeah, I feel like if they could do that and they could put it on the right track right away, then it could be a good thing. But you're right. It's got to start from the top, and it's got to move down from there.
That's my only problem is there's no regulation on it. Like, who's regulating, you know, where this money is coming from? Who's getting these kids this money? But other than that, I get it, you know. But there should be some kind of regulatory, you know, factor in, you know, finding out where these funds are coming from, you know, who they're coming from, you know, how much, you know, and why. You know, those are things that could be taken, because then you're going to start signing contracts, and these kids are going to be 16, 17-year-olds signing contracts and monetizing themselves and not knowing what they're getting themselves into.
Yeah, I see that being a really huge issue.
Exactly, yeah. And I think this is definitely the first step towards that success.
Yeah, definitely agree. I mean, got a lot of this, you know, a lot of culture stuff going on right now. Where do you see culture and sports going in the near future here? You've been working, you know, so hard. I see everything expanding so quickly. What's the next step for you?
So just a few months ago, our organization is only about a half a year old. And we just started with a couple writers writing about either our own experiences or current events when it came to leadership or culture and sports. And so we started writing about that. And now we're transitioning also to adding a podcast to what it is we're doing. And eventually we're going to add video segments. We're going to develop some curriculum and courses. We're going to continue to work with universities and colleges, speaking to their student base about all things leadership and culture and sports, and we're going to continue to try and interact with collegiate organizations, high schools, districts, club teams, national governing bodies, professional sports teams to help assess, identify opportunities where culture can be improved for the betterment of not only the team and the organization itself, but it's also short and long term health of the athletes.
Nice. No, that's awesome. That's going to be, that's going to be super helpful. And I feel like a lot of people are going to be grateful that you're able to do that and kind of be able to just help people as they go. I mean, visiting these different places, kind of explaining, you know, kind of what you went through in general and, you know, what creates a good culture and things like that. I mean, that's just helpful.
I can speak for both of us. We're super excited to be a part of this.
And yeah, absolutely.
Be, you know, kind of doing this with you guys. And I'm glad you guys brought us along, and we're excited to see where this goes and how we can contribute. So, Jeremy, thank you so much.
Thank you very much for having me today and for giving me the opportunity to speak about leadership and culture and sports.
Well, no, it was amazing. And, you know, I guarantee we're going to have you on again. We're going to do probably a few more. You got so many interesting things to talk about.
We'll think about it. We'll talk about it. we'll have a board meeting, and we'll talk about it if we want to have you back. No, I'm just playing. But, yeah, thank you so much, Jeremy.
Thank you very much.
Jeremy, thanks, bud. Have a great one, man.
We'll pause. Well, we don't have to get off.
We can pause it.
Just
so now we'll